Blog Talk Radio.
Most of the time, people get swept away by Chinook winds. But, unfortunately, John Yoder got swept up by a bossy boss who works near the beach and has a dog that she treats like royalty. So it's my understanding that he works 16 hours straight and he won't be able to join us tonight. Now, the reason that I wanted to focus on ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq, and the Levant is that it's something that grew from within a country similar to the Taliban, but its legitimacy spreads throughout the whole Middle East in terms of their fighting techniques and their purpose. It's almost like a mutant type fighting unit that arises when the own government authority becomes illegitimate. And even though the dictionary online defines ISIS as Islamic State of Iraq, I believe in the future it's going to spread because they're recruiting people from all over the world, including Europe. People who are alienated by a traditional Christian faith-based nation are now recruiting members of Islam who lived in, it's not necessarily white boys, you know, it's people who lived in Britain and other, France and other islands and peninsulas, and then decided to leave that Western European comfortable environment after they were already members and citizens, or maybe even just, you know, permanent residents, and decided to fight for a religious cause. Now, what makes this particularly dangerous is that they're out in the open. They're not hiding like the Taliban. They don't, you know, they're not set up the way the Taliban were with secret training and hiding in caves. They're right out there in the opening, and they're terrorizing people in certain portions of Iraq that don't fit within their particular sect of Islam, and they've killed a lot of people already. The United States government, I knew, would fail in setting up Iraq because there's too much extremism there, and now people who shouldn't be dying are. Like in Mosul, where there's a core group of Christians and another sect of Islam, those people are being persecuted too. I forget the name, but I will read it in the news items shortly. The Islamic State, ISIS, is formerly the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. It's a Sunni jihad group in the Mideast, and its self-proclaimed status as a caliphate, which means a holy organizational unit. It claims religious authority over all Muslims across the world and aspires to bring much of the Muslim-inhabited regions of the world under its political control, beginning with Iraq, Syria, and other territories in the Levant region, which includes Jordan, Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, Cyprus, and southern Turkey, has been designated as a foreign terrorist organization by the U.S., U.K., Australia, Canada, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, and has been described by the United Nations in Western and Middle Eastern media as a terrorist group. The United Nations has accused the Islamic State of committing mass atrocities and crimes. ISIS is the successor of the Tanzim Qaeda al-Jihad Bilad al-Rafidan, more commonly known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq, AQI, formed by Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Now that guy, I'm pretty sure he's dead by now. In 2004, which took part in an Iraqi insurgency I guess, American-led forces, and let Iraq allies follow the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Now, before I bring this any further, I want to say the foundation of this group, you know, it claims its own legitimacy, which means up until the last 10 years, nation states have battled each other and factions within states. But now that we have the rise and the advent of non-state actors, it gets harder to define. So I am going to kick off tonight with a song because I was forced to do, you know, some double duty today too with my job, and I want to be more coherent. So I'm going to play this song, and then we're going to kick off to a real show. Here we go. And there's going to be a stupid advertisement for 15 seconds.
If you want a life,
bear with me. I'll see you in a few.
The Chicago campaign premieres Wednesday, September 24th. And catch up on the entire first season on NBC.com.
Thank you.
That song is the shizzle. Anyways, I love that song. I want to remind everybody in and out of the studio that the reason why this particular group is more dangerous than Al-Qaeda is that it's out in the open. They're recruiting from all over the world. The funding comes internationally. They're fearless. And they won't stop until they establish a permanent Islamic state beyond the borders of Iraq. So let's cover a few facts over again, and then we'll jump to modern day. Let's see, it was established, according to records, January 3rd, 2014, and the caliphate declared was established June 29, 2014. Now, I mean, even the fact that international news has to cover it under this banner makes it phenomenal, because it is a religious motivated violent group that believes that the only way for people to submit is through direct violence and gunpoint authority. Some Christians call groups like this gunpoint conversion. And they're also, their tainted perception that ordinary Muslims that may not be part of their sect are corrupt. So I'm just going to read a couple more facts. It's the successor or trump card to the Al-Qaeda. Now, supposedly it was formed 10 years ago by Zakari, but he's long gone now. During the 2011 Iraqi war, it combined other Sunni insurgent groups to form the Mujahideen Shura Council and consolidated further into the Islamic State of Iraq. Now, on one of the episodes with under the Earnest Radio Network, I covered the Mujahideen. I believe it was in early to mid 2013. And its height, it has enjoyed a significant presence in the Iraqi governorates of Al-Anbar, Nineveh, Kirkuk, Salah, and Din, and parts of Babil, Diyala, Baghdad, and reclaimed the capital city of Baquba. However, the Islamic State of Iraq's violent attempts to govern its territory led to a backlash from Sunni Iraqis and other insurgent groups, which helped to propel the awakening movement and a decline in the group. Now, there has been international assistance, because what they did is they went into the foothills of places near Baquba, and they wiped out small coalition of villages that didn't have a lot of resources to begin with. It's a humanitarian disaster. Until its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, ISIS has grown significantly, gaining support in Iraq due to alleged economic and political discrimination against Iraqi Sunnis, and established a large presence of Syrian governorates in Araqqa, Idlib, Deir, Aleppo, and because Iraq does border Syria, and there's been over 100,000 people displaced to Turkey, Jordan, and other areas, maybe the more violent insurgent types filtered into Iraq to be part of that group. In June 2014, ISIS had at least 4,000 fighters in its rank who, in addition to attacks on government and military targets, have claimed responsibility for attacks that killed thousands of civilians. In August of 2014, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights claimed that the group had increased to 50,000 fighters in Syria and 30,000 in Iraq. That is really bad news. ISIS' original aim was to establish a caliphate in the Sunni-majority regions of Iraq. Now, I want to throw something in here quick. See, when Saddam Hussein had his 24-year stronghold over Iraq, he was a Sunni, and the Shias were persecuted. But then when Hussein's power dissipated and the American government was still present, the Shias had the upper hand. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, known as Amir Mumnin Caliph Ibrahim, was named the head of the caliph here just a few months ago. Now, they killed many people, and I'm going to give you a brief list. It's such a long list that I have to cut it down, and I'm just going to deal with July and August. But just so you know, their declaration started in January. So I just have to read this preliminary history. On January 3rd, ISIS proclaimed an Islamic state in Fallujah. After prolonged tensions, the newly formed army of the Mujahideen, the Free Syrian Army, and the Islamic Front launched an offensive against ISIS-held territory in the Syrian provinces of Aleppo and Idlib. A spokesman for the rebels said that the rebels have attacked ISIS up to 80% of all ISIS-held villages in Idlib and 65% of those in Aleppo. Now, you know, Bashar al-Assad is an Alawite, which is part of a Muslim sect, but his persecution of Alawites had been known throughout the kingdom of Syria or country. He protected Christians and other minorities, Bashar al-Assad, but then when the rebels increased, those minority groups like the Christians and Alawites were under attack. And that's one reason that Barack Obama didn't go in there to support rebels, because the minority Christians and other groups had been protected up to that point. So it was a delicate balance. Now, if you were to look at a map of Syria and Iraq, the Iraqi government does have strong controls in many areas. But there's a big chunk near Syria and, I would say, northwestern Iraq that's controlled by ISIS. The Syrian Kurds are also in fear because they had perfect autonomy all this time shortly after the 2003 fighting ended. So they've been living the good life, and all of a sudden now they're faced with this ISIS group that has been trying to tear down local villages and threatening Kurdish independence. On January 8, 2014, Syrian rebels expelled most of ISIS forces from the city of Aleppo. However, ISIS reinforcements from Deir ez-Zor province managed to retake several neighborhoods of the city of Al-Raqqa. By mid-January, ISIS fighters had taken the entire city of Al-Raqqa, while rebels exposed ISIS fighters fully from Aleppo City and villages west of it. The Western dilemma in this conflict is how far are we going to let the Muslim extremists fight? How many citizens and people are we going to take down after billions of people, billions of dollars were sunk into Iraq? It was almost worse than Vietnam in a sense, because in Vietnam we were there 16 years. In Iraq we were there only there 10, but we still had administrators in there the final 2 years, the 11th and 12th year, which is the 12th year is coming up. And in Afghanistan, we also had been there so far 13 and a half years, and we're supposed to be wrapping that up, and it's never going to end. I want Bible-based Christians who are part of this group to understand, those are the majority of my listeners, that the war will not end. Now that the U.S. had to go back into northwestern Iraq and subdue this ISIS army, it is now a it is no longer, in my opinion, a secular versus religious battle or a country on country. It is a religious battle that will not be subdued until the Islam State will willingly destroy Israel if it could. But the Western world and the Western alliances will have to prevent that. Okay, so I'm going to jump to May now, because we only have a 30-minute show tonight. In May 2014, well, there's only two major events in April and May. So on April 27th, Iraqi military helicopters reportedly attacked and destroyed an ISIS convoy of 8 vehicles inside Syria. This may be the first time that Iraqi forces have struck outside their country since the Gulf War. Now, when you think about the context of this, who are the fighters? Like I said, they were recruited worldwide. In the old days, it was enough for Kuwait, the invasion of Kuwait by Saddam Hussein. That was enough to cause an international war or confrontation. Now they're just crossing the Syrian border to take advantage of them because the country's in the middle of a terrible civil war. In May 2014, ISIS carried out a total of 7 public executions in the city of Ar-Raqqa in northern Syria. Pictures that emerged from the city show how ISIS had been carrying out public crucifixions in areas under its control. Remember, audience, I told you it was acting like the Crusades. They were going from city to city, town to village, and gunpoint converting people. And those who didn't immediately convert were killed or set aside. In most of these crucifixions, the victims were shot first and their bodies then were displayed. But there were also reports of crucifixions preceding the victims being shot or decapitated. That means they hung on a cross like Jesus. In one case, a man was said to have been crucified alive for 8 hours, but there was no indication of whether he died. Now, you know, this is beyond society. This is beyond society decaying or breaking down. This is mass murder on a grand scale in the minds of warriors and fighters who think other citizens are unfit to even live. It is extremely dangerous. In early June, following its large-scale offenses in Iraq, ISIS was reported to have seized control of most of Mosul. The second most populous city in Iraq, a large part of the surrounding Nineveh province and the city of Fallujah, ISIS also took control of Tikrit, and that's Saddam Hussein's hometown, with the ultimate goal of capturing Baghdad. ISIS has believed to have only 2,000 to 3,000 fighters up until the Mosul campaign, but during that campaign, it became evident that the number was a gross underestimate. I also believe those gunpoint conversion types were forced to join the army, in my opinion. Also in June, there were reports of a number of Sunni groups in Iraq that were opposed to the predominantly Shia government and had joined ISIS. The Shias were the minority under the 24 reign of Saddam. Now they're the majority. Those Sunnis who defected went into ISIS. However, the Kurds, who are mostly Sunnis in northern Iraq, were unwilling to be drawn into the conflict, and there were clashes in the area between ISIS and Kurdish Peshmerga. Now, I told you that throughout, you can go back to Iraqi history all the way to 1970. The Kurds do not want to be, culturally, ethnically, they don't even want to be part of Iraq or any of its conflict. They want to be left alone. Peshmerga and Peshmerge are those who confront death. It's the term used by the Kurds to refer to armed Kurdish fighters. The Peshmerga forces of Kurdistan have existence Since the advent of Kurdish independence in the early 1920s, when they had to fight between the collapse of the Ottoman Empire and the Qajar empires. As I said, regionally and geographically, the Kurds want nothing to do with this crazy fighting, even if they are, many of them are of Sunni Muslim faith, they would want to stay autonomous. On June 5th, ISIS militants stormed the city of Samarra, Iraq, before being ousted by the city by airstrikes mounted by the Iraqi military. On June 6th, ISIS militants carried out multiple attacks on Mosul. On the 7th, they took over the University of Anbar in Ramadi and held 1,300 students hostage before being ousted by the Iraqi military. The U.S. better keep their sorry asses there. This shit is heavy on the fan. On June 9th, the Mosul government fell to ISIS control. The militants seized control of government offices, the airports, and police stations. Militants also looted the central bank in Mosul, reportedly absconding $429 million of U.S. dollars. Now that is scary. More than 500,000 people fled Mosul to escape ISIS. So now we have this mass migration. Mosul is a strategic city as it is the crossroads between Syria and Iraq and poses the threat of seizing control of oil production. Would the United States let that happen? On June 11th, ISIS seized the Turkish consulate of the Iraqi city of Mosul and kidnapped the head of diplomatic mission and several staff members. ISIS seized the Iraqi city of Tikrit, which is Saddam would be rolling in his grave, but he'd probably be happy because it's blood revenge on the United States. June 12th, the Human Rights Commission and international organization issued a statement about the growing threat to civilians. Now, you have to realize the average Joe Blow in Iraq is just barely making it. They have limited resources. It's a desert. There's few farming areas, and they're subject to crazy government. I know this is a good reference for people who are following the historical timeline, but I can only read a few more events in June. In June 13, Navi Pillay, a UN High Commissioner on Human Rights, expressed alarm at reports that ISIS fighters had been actively seeking out and in some cases killing soldiers, police, civilians, whom they perceived being associated with the Iraqi government. Navi Pillay is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. I'm glad somebody's paying attention. On June 15th, ISIS militants captured the Iraqi city of Tal Afar and the province of Nineveh, the historical biblical place. ISIS claimed that 1,700 Iraqi soldiers who had surrendered in the fighting had been killed and released many images of mass executions via Twitter. Boy, isn't that special. 1,700 soldiers perished in one day. This is a humanitarian crisis. On June 22nd, ISIS militants captured two key crossings in Anbar, a day after seizing the border crossing at Al-Qa'im, a town in a province which borders Syria. According to analysts, capturing these crossings could aid ISIS in transporting weapons and equipment to different battlefields. On the 24th of June, the Syrian Air Force bombed ISIS positions in Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki stated, "There was no coordination involved, but we welcome this action. We welcome any Syrian strike against ISIS because this group targets both Iraq and Syria." Now, this Nouri Kamil Mohammed Hussein Malachi, he's also known as Jawad A. Malachi, was the Prime Minister of Iraq at one point and Secretary General of the Islamic Dawah Party. Al-Malachi and his government was succeeded by the Iraqi Transitional Government in 06. His first cabinet was approved by the National Assembly in 06. And then I believe he phased out. Let's see here. He was preceded by Jawad al-Bulani, who ruled from only 1 month, and he assumed office in 2010. He is now Minister of the Interior. I've seen him on the news quite a bit. Now, it's strange in this sense, you know, okay, there is Islam who are killing Islam and other minority groups in Syria, but now across the spread of two different countries, there are Islam killing Islam. The thin authority figure of the Iraqi government versus the radical religious group ISIS. It's only a matter of time before, with all these killings, that ISIS is going to take the upper hand, in my opinion, unless the death toll gets so outrageous that people are just going to sigh in sorrow. I heard something on NPR today that they attempted to make airdrops of humanitarian proportions, and they were prevented in some areas from the fighting. But people dying for two reasons. There's no food and there's no water. Even a few pregnant women they mentioned died this last week. And this man with a kidney disease was dying because he couldn't get the proper clean water. So who cares if they're going to be pure Muslims? It seems like they're going to die anyways in the surrounding area because this military unit known as ISIS respects no one. Okay, I'm jumping back to June now. Well, by the way, they've been in more than two countries. They also killed border patrols in Turkey in January. And the Turkish army retaliated with special military equipment. Now, I think we're going to, John and I will tackle, it's getting more and more intense. And the U.S. is considering airstrikes now on ISIS in Syria, which would draw the military force directly into the civil war in Syria. But Obama better act quickly because I believe this is a just war to get involved with, and we're strongly responsible for what has gone on in Iraq. Maybe not in certain areas where the U.S. never had a stronghold, but the civil unrest is growing. Just a few days ago on August 28th, the Islamic State beheaded a Lebanese army soldier who they kidnapped. The group also beheaded a Kurdish Peshmerga fighter in response to the Kurdistan's alliance with the U.S. and executed around 250 Syrian soldiers captured at the fall of Tabqa Air Base in Ar-Raqqa. The soldiers had earlier been marched to their place of execution wearing just their underwear. You know, I consider this a major war. There's between 100 to 1,000 people dying a day. The most key initiative, we have 7 minutes left in the show, the United States military admitted that a covert rescue attempt involving dozens of U.S. Special Operations Forces has been made to rescue James Foley and other Americans held captive in Syria by Islamic State militants. The air and ground assault involving the first U.S. military ground action inside Syria had the authorization of Obama. The ensuing gunfight resulted in one U.S. soldier being injured. The rescue was unsuccessful as Foley and other captives were not in the location targeted. This was the first known engagement by U.S. ground forces with suspected Islamic State militants. The United States Defense Secretary warned that the Islamic State were tremendously well-funded, adding they have no standard of decency or responsible human behavior and they were the imminent threat to the U.S. I was saying that earlier about Geneva Convention rules. They don't give a flying crap. So I'm not saying a unipolar power like the United States is going to make a permanent difference. It's going to take more than the U.S. It's going to take a Western alliance coalition. These people are out for blood, and they will kill their own. They're really just going to break down the natural resources and the strength of the area. It's not going to be good. It's going to get worse before it gets better, and people will die. I'm hoping the UN and the United States could take a strong stance in this area and find a way to distribute food and health and other needed resources to civilians who are just in the crossfire of all this craziness. Thank you for joining my show. I'm extremely tired tonight, and I'm sorry if I didn't correctly pronounce all my words. In this case, I believe the United States should be involved because we left loose ends in Iraq, and now we've created a illegitimate, we haven't created it, but because of non-government strongholds and disrespect for Shia ruling Iraqis, the crazy extreme arm of Muslim society that creates these violent factions that have worldwide recruitment becomes the oppressor. Stay tuned until Armageddon.